So first of all, I want to say I am double big red, 93 and 93 undergrad, 99 Johnson School. Very happy to be here. I want to thank you all for coming. Also, I read the Who's Coming page, and I have to say we have a very impressive list of speakers, but we also have a really impressive audience here today, so look forward to talking more with all of you. So my talk today is about not just finding the right problem, but how to tell if your solution is working. When you're starting these companies in the early days, sometimes you've picked a great problem, and it's just hard to tell exactly when to keep going or not. Well, you know, the past two speakers have talked about this a little bit, so that's what I'm going to talk about today. So I thought I would look back first a little bit in history and see if I could take some lessons about how to pick a good problem. So I looked at Charlie Chaplin. Okay, so one way to find a good problem is to create the problem in the first place. But assuming you don't want to do that, what I thought I would talk about today is actually my own story. After spending 9 years at Yahoo, I decided to leave and go try to start a company. And we picked a problem to solve. So think back to 2008. Yelp was starting to get very successful. Anybody notice anything about that picture in particular? This is the top Italian restaurants in San Francisco. What's that? All the ratings are the same, exactly. Does anyone know the average rating of all objects on the web? 4.4 stars. So, not super helpful. The other thing here is that they have hundreds of reviews each. So we saw an opportunity here. It was the beginning of the iPhone. iPhone 3, this was, had just come out. And we thought, there's no way that people are going to want to read hundreds of reviews for places on their mobile device, especially when all the ratings are the same and it's really going to be hard to tell what are the best places and what are not. So we decided to try to solve that problem. We built a technology that pulled sentiment and structure out of unstructured, what I called soupy text. So we struck a bunch of deals with people. We analyzed 40 million reviews on the web, and we sorted them into these buckets of features, positive, neutral, and negative. You could quickly get a read on any business and what that business was about. And we also grouped them into what we called flavors. I don't know why we use that word. It's horrible. But the idea was intent categories, so you could tell quickly if a place was upscale or good for late night or romantic or good for kids. And then we built a really nifty iPhone app because this was the burgeoning app marketplace and we wanted to be there too. And we didn't stop there. We did email. We did Twitter feeds in hundreds of cities. We built widgets like this one that we could put on sites like Fandango to tell you what places were around the movie theater you were going to go to. So we thought this was a great opportunity, a big problem, needed solving. And the question is, did it work? So this was our user graph. Looks pretty good. This was our first year. But the answer is no, it did not work. So how did we tell? First of all, this is 2008, right? So very difficult time in the economy, very difficult time to be running a startup and trying to raise money. And there were a few lessons we learned here about why it wasn't working. The first is that users were not enough. In this case, these were, you know, this is a consumer internet site, so these folks were not paying us. And at this pace, it just wasn't enough. And the truth is, if you look back at the other slide, the little bullet that says partner launch, the users were not ours either. They were people that were seeing our content on other people's sites, you know, which was good, but not a lot of value to us. Cash is king. I don't know how many times they drilled this into us at the Johnson School. I probably heard this, you know, thousands of times. Seems very obvious. But at the time, it's not all that obvious, especially in these early venture-backed businesses. You often have board members saying, oh, no, it's all about users. Go for more audience. Get bigger. And then you can worry about money. Not true. Especially in a tough economy, when it's hard to raise money, you don't want to be in that spot. Customers liked it. We solved a good problem, but they didn't need it. There weren't people like begging for our solution. And we found one really good set of customers, which were other local publishers. So we ended up with a data licensing business where we licensed this content to people like yellowpages.com, who had lots of listings, but no content. And they really needed and wanted our content, and they paid us a lot for it. Problem was, there were not enough of them. Local publishers as your entire market, just not big enough. So we came to what I call the crossroads. This is the end of 2009. This is a slide, not a great slide, but a slide directly out of my board deck from that last board meeting of the year. And the discussion was something like this. These are trends that we are poised to take advantage of in 2010. One of them was to stay in sort of what we were doing, which I call kind of the location-based services and mobile space. And then we talked about these other opportunities. And the one that I felt most passionate about was this one in the upper left called Local Deals. And if you look at the people I put in that section, you can see that the local deal marketplace had not really begun yet. Groupon was there, they were small at the time, and none of the other players had entered the marketplace yet. So we were very early at kind of looking at this trend and seeing that it was an opportunity. Part of the reason was because I had done years of focus groups at Yahoo and had always heard that people, when they think about local, they just wanted to know what was on sale and who was having a great deal. So we decided, as a board, not unanimously, tough, sometimes you have to just make these calls and go forward with your gut, and we decided that we would change everything we were doing. We started a brand new company from scratch. I named it much better the second time. My first name had an apostrophe in it, which, by the way, don't ever do. It breaks all code on the internet. Did not think about that. And we launched the Deal Map. It took us only 5 months to build and launch it because we built it on the same technology platform, but we cleaned up everything we did, launched from scratch, and we had 400,000 deals a day across the whole country. So what we did was we aggregated not only the Groupon-style sort of daily deals, but also what we called national local deals, so deals from people like, you know, 15% off at Macy's, or buy one sub, get one free at Quiznos, those kinds of things, and map them to their location. And then we had deals added directly from small businesses themselves and from consumers. And what we ended up with was very quickly the largest network for distributing local deals out there. So we had 150 paying partners within months. We literally would get dozens of emails every week from people saying, how do I get my deals in the Deal Map? Because everyone wanted to be in this marketplace. And then we had a lot of publishers, again, who wanted this content and didn't want to do the work we were doing. So the question is, how did we know to go there, and how could we tell that it was working? You know, we had this other example that really didn't work. So the first thing we did was gut check our hypothesis. We went out, sorry, this was done with Haas, which is more local to us, but could have been done by Johnson School. So we asked people how they felt about deals, and we got stats like this. 80% of people told us they feel not just good, but exhilarated when they find a deal on something they want. And this was universal across demographics. Men, women, old, young, everybody kind of felt this way. So we thought that was a good sign. As soon as we launched it, people started talking about it. We did not do anything. They were on Twitter telling each other about it, and we could see that and watch how it would grow. And this time, we had really engaged users of our own. So this is not our partner network reach. This is our own direct, owned and operated network reach. And it grew organically. More than half the traffic came to us just directly, people typing in our name or people searching for our app on the iPhone. People came back again and again. And then, interestingly, each of these sources mattered. So it would be easy to say, let's only do mobile or let's only do social, but the combination of all those things was what was effective. And we were even surprised to see that, you know, people on Twitter were buying. 10% of our purchases came from Twitter. And the revenue model, by the way, was a rev share on the gross transaction. And we were doing about 20% revenue share on all the transactions that went through our network. And if we were to add the partner network reach onto this, this chart would be 50 million. Our partner reach was so much larger than our owned and operated, but even our owned and operated network was growing really quickly. And it was hard. All those early years, we invested in the platform, they paid off. You know, what we ended up with was this technology stack that was difficult to do. We had a lot of IP, and because it was hard to do, it meant that people wanted to work with us. And I think the day that I really thought, geez, we're onto something, was the day I got this email. After, you know, years of me sending cold emails to people trying to work with them, I got an inbound email from a VP at MasterCard saying, you're on our radar, we'd like to work with you. This was 5 months after we launched the product. So I thought, okay, you know, maybe something's working here. So another sign, again, that it was working, we did not go out and do a lot of press outreach. We were a startup, we didn't have a lot of money, and one day we woke up and our traffic was through the roof and we thought, what happened? Turns out Clark Howard.
I love a deal.
So he did that of his own accord, literally found our site, liked it, and did about a 5-minute clip on his show on CNN. This is an edited down version, but we could not believe it. And so again, this was a sign to us that we had built something that not only solved a real problem, but that made people really happy. So we came to another crossroads to decide whether to sell the company. We had several people interested in buying the company and also had term sheets for more funding. This was a very hard decision. In the same way, it was hard to decide whether to pivot to this in the first place. We had a split board in that case. We had a split board again on deciding whether or not to sell. I got some great advice here from someone who worked in M&A at Yahoo, and what he said to me was, Jen, everything has a window. There are certain times when, you know, certain things get very popular, and that's your window. And you need to know when you're in your window, because if you're in it, it's great, and if you're out of it, it can be disaster. So we decided this was our window. I think if you have seen what's happened to the local deals ecosystem since this period, I think we chose fairly wisely. And we are now, my whole team is at Google, and we are powering Google Offers, Google Maps, and soon Google Shopping. So we're excited about that. So what did we learn through the process? I learned the first thing is trust your instincts. If it feels like it might not be working, it probably is not working. It's hard to know, especially when people are pressuring you. Things are going better, you know, they were going up and to the right and we were starting to make money, but it just wasn't enough, and you have to trust your gut in those moments. What I think is the minimum criteria is a very passionate, engaged group of users. It does not have to be, or customers, it does not have to be huge. If you look at, actually Twitter is one of my favorite examples, because those guys could have quit a long time ago and didn't, and because they stuck with it, this is an example of a business that has gotten quite large, but I think what they had all the way along was a really passionate small community that once they hit, it got very large. So find that passionate community. Get to your revenue model as soon as possible. At DealMap, we had a formula. We knew you can pour X amount of dollars in here and X plus Y dollars come out here. So we knew when we went to go get more funding exactly what we would put that funding against and how it would work. And to me, also enjoy the ride. It's, you know, it was very bumpy. There were, you know, days I felt at the top of the mountain, days I felt at the bottom of the mountain. But now, back at a big company, it's, you know, it's easy to look back and say, actually, the bumpy parts were part of the fun. So when I first started, this is my last, I know I'm just out of time. When I first started this job, someone told me this. The odds, actually, are higher that I would have said I had seen a UFO than my venture-backed business succeeding. And so I thought, should I do this? And I decided, you never know. So, thank you.
Thank you.